sleep. To be.
And we're recording. Hello, everyone. Girls and
gays. Hello, girls, gays, and bays.
Welcome to Rate, Debate, Recreate. I'm Sammy Purcell.
And I'm Logan Keller.
And we're back for episode 4 of this season. I think it might be our most listened to episode, but jury's out. We'll see.
I mean,
here's I'm being sarcastic. That,
like, I don't know, though. Like, I know you're being sarcastic, but I do think that the people that, like, know about this will listen. And I think we'll talk about this, but I think that's very emblematic of the two shows we're talking about today.
Yes, I do, too. But I do have a question for you.
Yes, Sammy.
So, what is your favorite, like, parody of a thing that exists? Like, what is your favorite parody of something that you love, which is a hint to what we're talking about today?
That's a great question. Did you just come up with that on the spot?
I did. Yes, I did.
Oh, my favorite parody. I am a huge, huge fan of parodies and just like stupid humor. Yeah, this is definitely a parody, and it's also my favorite movie of all time, which is Scary Movie 3. That's my favorite parody. I can quote the entire movie from beginning to end, like, without fail. I've seen the movie over 50 times, no cap, like, 100% true. And, yeah, that's what I'm going to say. Anna Faris does not get the credit she deserves. Let's just say that.
She is really funny. I'm a big fan of What's Your Number, which is a horrible romantic comedy that she's in. But you know what? I love it. All right. Well, I think my favorite parody is maybe not the one I'm going to talk about today, but tangentially related to my actual favorite parody, which I will talk about later. And if you're new to Rate, Debate, Recreate, you might not understand any of the words that we're saying, but I'll explain a little bit what the show is about. So each week, Logan and I will pick a musical and we'll rate that show on a scale of 1 to 10, debate which one is better, and then think of what aspect we would change and recreate that. Recreate's a loose term. Sometimes we're serious, sometimes we have fun with it. Just depends on the week. So each week we have a category, and our category this week is I'm a motherfucking star kid.
Yes.
And my show is none other than a Very Potter musical. If you know, you know.
And my show is Firebringer. If you know, you know. You know, if you don't know, you know, you'll know from I Don't Really Want to Do the Work Today. I Don't Really Want to Do the Work Today.
Seriously, though, I had seen that like a million times and I had no idea it was from Firebringer. Wow. Lauren Lopez supremacy.
National treasure.
National treasure, Lauren Lopez. Okay, so I'm going to get started with a little bit of summary, if that's okay. And also maybe just like a little bit of explaining of like what Star Kid is.
Yeah, I feel like we definitely should do that.
So if you don't know, so Star Kid is like a musical theater, and you can help me with this. I'm just kind of counting off my memory. But a musical theater troupe or group, whatever, that was started at the University of Michigan in like 2009 or maybe before that, but like got popularized around 2009 because of a Very Potter musical. And probably the most famous person to come out of it is Darren Criss, aka Blaine from Glee, and other things, among other things. So yeah, they just do like a bunch of he's pretty famous. He won an Emmy.
I know Glee was big, but I feel like he really crossed into the mainstream in the last few years in a way that he had.
Yeah, like, and I think
he was Emmy nominated for like
he won. He was in that Ryan Murphy show about the guy who murdered Versace.
The murderer. Yes. That's all I know.
Yes, and he won. He was good. That show was a lot, but he was good in it. But yeah, so he is super famous now. And honestly, like, it's weird because I don't know if you we're getting on a tangent. Did you know who he did you like know AVPM before he was on Glee? Like, did you know who he was? I did too, and it was very weird.
It was
like
so
see him.
It was there. Almost like the like, honestly, a way to compare it was just like in seeing like the Elle Woods competition and seeing these like nobodies make it. Like, not that there's nobody, it's just in terms of people having like not, you know, a huge mass of following. Because especially I feel like way back before Glee, a Very Potter musical was like a cult like favorite, but it was not like by any means widely popularized at that point.
No, I don't think so either. And then like after he got on Glee, I feel like a lot more people were like, oh, maybe I'll go and watch that. And then it got like a little bit more popular. And basically, so basically what StarKid does is they just do like, they come up with original musicals, but they also do a bunch of like parody musicals. So they've got like three Harry Potter musicals at this point. So there's a Very Potter musical, which is the one we're talking about today, a Very Potter sequel, and then a Very Potter senior year, which I think they actually like performed live at LeakyCon. And Darren Criss, Darren Criss was like properly famous at that point, and he like, I guess hadn't been able, I think what had happened was like he couldn't come to some rehearsals or something. So he has like, they all have like scripts in their hands on stage. It's still pretty funny.
Yeah.
But it's like, and Ivana Lynch, like Luna Lovegood is like in it. Like she's there's like an actor in it.
I have not seen the, I did not know there was a
film. It's pretty funny. It's, I think I've the second like, one is my favorite.
Almost every StarKid production and I haven't seen
it. Yeah. It's pretty good. But yeah, so they do, they did like a Batman, Holy Musical Batman. Firebringer is like kind of a parody of history, I guess. So they do a lot of stuff. But so a Very Potter musical, I'll just kind of go through the basics of it. It's pretty long. You can watch it on YouTube, but it's basically.
Wait, sorry. While we're still talking about StarKid, can I say one more thing?
Yes, please do.
Okay, this might be just like annoying to say, but this StarKid reminds me so much of Original Cast.
Dude, which, I wrote that in my notes.
Really? Which, if you are listening and you don't know who Original Cast is, that's the musical theater group that Sammy and I were in college. Yeah. We wrote all our own shows. They were all kind of like, I wouldn't say we were as parody-y as they were,
no,
but
we're not
in terms of like the homemade and like group connection vibes and like I feel like that I get a lot of the same vibes.
Yeah. And watching it was like so nostalgic because it's like basically all their friends in the audience. So people are like losing their minds, really reacting, laughing really hard because they know those people. And I was like, oh man, this like reminds me of being on stage. Yeah, it was really sweet watching it this time around. But okay, so I'll go through the plot of this pretty quickly. So basically what they do for all three of these is they just take like different aspects of the 7-book Harry Potter series and kind of like switch them around and throw them into three separate musicals in like 3 bags. So there's like stuff in the first one from the 4th book, from the 7th book, from blah blah blah, blah. So it's a little discombobulated, but basically the first one, so Very Potter musical, starts with Harry Potter, aka the boy who lived, going back to Hogwarts with his friends. They get to Hogwarts, there's like a Triwizard tournament, so that's from the 4th book, and they pull that in, but instead of like new schools coming in, it's just among the houses at Hogwarts. If you don't really know Harry Potter stuff, I'm not gonna take the time to explain it, so I'm sorry about that. Get up on the lingo, but so there's the tournament that's going on, and at the same time, Professor Quirrell from the 1st book is there, so they like pull that aspect of it in. So Voldemort is like trying to kill Harry, and there's this tournament going on, and then at some point Voldemort takes over Hogwarts and then Harry wins. That's really like the basis of it. Like, I don't, it's so, it's a really long musical. Like, honestly,
it's really chaotic. And it's
extremely chaotic.
It's very out of order Harry Potter.
Yes, it's out of order Harry Potter. That's like a good way to describe it. And like, it's just silly. It's extremely silly. It's like so obviously made by people who really love Harry Potter, and because they love it so much are like willing to reckon with its faults, I think. Which is nice. Yeah, it's just like super super funny, and we're gonna get way more into it as we go. There's a lot to parse, I think. Yeah,
do you have
I have to rate it, shoot. Okay, I got one. I'm gonna give Very Potter musical 8 out of 10 Bitch, I Ate Cho Chang's.
Yes.
So I'll explain that a little bit. So if you know anything about Harry Potter, Cho Chang is the name of like a love interest of Harry's. It's a pretty racist name.
I mean, the only Asian character in the entire Harry Potter
franchise. Her name is Cho Chang. So there's like a bit at the beginning where Cho Chang enters and there's like three girls and they're like, who's that? That's Cho Chang. And one of the girls is Asian. The other two are white. And Ginny goes up to introduce herself to Cho Chang, and she introduces herself to the Asian girl on stage, and the Asian girl looks at her and goes, bitch, I ain't Cho Chang. And the joke is that Cho Chang is like this tall, extremely southern white woman. And that's like the joke for the rest of the thing. Yeah, so 8 out of 10, bitch, I ain't Cho Chang's.
Wow. Okay. Firebringer. So I'm also going to do a pretty short summary of Firebringer. One great thing about both of these shows is that you don't even have to bootleg them to see them. They're both, yes, like the professionally recorded versions are available on YouTube, on the Star Kid Productions YouTube channel. I really highly recommend going to see them. It's like, I love how accessible they make it and how, mm-hmm, yeah. So Firebringer is basically about the time in humanity where humans discovered fire. So it literally takes place like as the very, very first tribes of humanity are coming to life, I guess you could say. And it mainly follows two characters, although there's a whole cast and crew obviously that have their own parts. But the main storyline is between Jamila, who is known as the Peacemaker, and she is this kind of like really pragmatic leader of the tribe. And then there's also Zazalil, who is really lazy, but also simultaneously like kind of ambitious and innovative. And all of that stems from her want to be even more lazy.
Pause. There's a giant wasp in my house.
Oh my God.
I'm staring at it. One second. Oh my God. Oh God. How do I get it? How did it get in here? Oh my God, it's so big.
You have like a cup that you could cup it in or something?
Let me see. Oh my God. Willie! I don't know.
That was a Wendy Williams ass sound.
Oh my God! I like cannot get near it. Oh my God. It's on top of my candle.
Light the candle?
No, it's closed. Oh God, I had a heart attack.
We are back from a mini excursion as Sammy took care of a pest.
Oh God, that was really
scary. I'm not her dog.
No, there's a wasp right in front of my face, just staring at me on my candle. Okay, I'm good. We're good.
Okay. I think where I was in my, somebody was talking about Zazalil. So she is really like innovative and ambitious, and that's all driven by her want to be really lazy. So basically she like tries to invent things to make their lives easier. She starts off by making what we would call now a spear to kill like animals to be able to eat them instead of just picking up like berries and nuts all day. And then she eventually accidentally discovers fire. And from then on, that really changes the whole thing. She becomes the new leader of the tribe. Jamila is exiled. And the tribe for a little bit enjoys the amenity that fire brings, and they no longer have to live in this cold cave. They're no longer scared of the big scary animals outside. But as you can imagine, fire is also really dangerous. And at some point it kind of becomes out of control, and Jamila and Zazalil reunite and save the tribe. And I'm not going to talk about the ending in the summary yet because it's really fucking bizarre. I live for it though. But yeah, that's the basic premise of Firebringer, is that it's literally just the beginning of time and they're discovering the world as we see it, and all the things that we take for granted today that we just, you know as fact. They're discovering it all for the first time, which I think provides a lot of opportunity for really like poignant commentary on society and the world, and also provides a lot of opportunity for really stupid and dumb jokes and jabs at not knowing what things are. So yeah. Okay. I'm going to rate Firebringer 10 out of 10. And I want to right now, I'm going to defend this more, but I want to defend this rating right now for a little bit and say like what I mean by that. I think that this show, and I'm just going to go ahead and reveal, I'm also giving AVPM 10 out of 10. Okay. I think that both of these shows do exactly what they set out to do. Mm-hmm. I don't think that they are perfect shows. They obviously don't have like a huge production budget. They're obviously not like trained professionals. Not to say they are very talented people in both of these shows. But they're also not like the highest of quality performers that you could find mm-hmm. in musical theater. But what I mean by this is I don't think that they are setting out to make that show. I don't think that shows would work with a massive production budget and like Sutton Foster and freaking Hugh Jackman. You know, like I think that these shows are meant to be this like really intimate and niche homemade quality and also really funny and really poignant. And I think that both of these shows do that to the max. And for the sake of like not focusing too much on like highbrow, lowbrow, whatever, like I think that they are, when they're making this art, they make exactly what they set out to make. And for that reason, mm-hmm. And for the fan bases that they have accumulated, myself included, I'm giving them a 10 out of 10.
Oh, wow. You might have. I'm going to keep my 8 out of 10 for A Very Potter Musical because I have a quibble with one of the choices in particular that I'll talk about. But you might have convinced me to go 10 out of 10 on Firebringer just because I think you're right. Like, I think they... I guess I can talk about this a little later too, or we can like just start talking.
Let's
about
just start. Yeah.
Let's just start talking about it now.
We gave ratings.
Yeah. We gave ratings. That's done. But I was going to say about Firebringer is I think like, because obviously like if you watch the Harry Potter musical recording, it's like, you can tell what's going on and you can hear them okay, but it's not like the highest quality recording in the world. And Firebringer is like
much better,
or real nice to watch. Like it was like very, I think it's also all in one video, which is nice. Like yes. A Very Potter musical.
23 yeah. like the 10 yeah. minute parts.
I know, which is, it's just nice. I think like you can really tell. And also like, I mean, just how good they are at singing, how much better the choreography is, how much better they are at executing the choreography and the vocals. Like, I just think you can tell that, like, because of this one thing that blew up, like, one time in 2009, they were like, oh shit. And they, like, not that they weren't good in 2009, but they, like, actively put a lot of work into trying to make it, like, the highest quality thing it could be. And I really like that. That's like,
yeah, and like, even thinking about the resources that they had mm-hmm. access to. At the time when AVPM was, when that was made, that, if you don't know, that's A Very Potter musical. I'm going to use that a lot. at the time that was made, they were still students at the University of mm-hmm. Michigan. So like, we literally can think of it like that for me is why I draw that parallel with original cast. Yeah. Now they are like this musical theater troupe from college that has gained resources and acclaim and a huge cult fan base. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know, but for Firebringer, they did a Kickstarter campaign to fund it. And I don't know if I have this pulled up. They literally had like advertised the Kickstarter campaign as like, let's make something new. Like it wasn't mm-hmm. even like, we have this amazing concept. It was like, we're ready for our next production. And it got $150,000 from 3,700 supporters.
Yeah, because I think when I was doing research for A Very Potter musical, when they were doing that for Firebringer, one of the like pluses for helping back it was they released A Very Potter Christmas, like just audio. It was like a fourth installment for people who backed the musical, which I was like, that's awesome, guys.
Yeah.
I think that is really cool. Like they've obviously amassed like a really cool following. I mean, it's just so much fun. And I do want to get like the thing I have a quibble with actually, pause. Let's start with these questions, because I'm trying to give us some, like, I feel like maybe people don't really, for people who don't know a lot about Starrkid, I think what attracted me to it, and like you can talk about what attracted you to it as well, is like it feels a lot like fan fiction. And when I was in middle school, I loved fan fiction, particularly Harry Potter fan fiction. And this just felt like
a fan fiction account.
All I did on Tumblr was like look at Marauder fan cast. So yeah, that was me. I'm a true millennial. So I wanted to talk a little bit about like why this, like, in a weird way, like fills that hole for me in like a parody way, but it's still very much like, oh, these people just like kind of created a fanfic, a funny one, like based on their favorite thing. And I feel like fanfiction, like, still to this day gets like a really crappy rep, even though like 50 Shades of Grey was fanfic. I think there's another big one that's like a big fantasy story that started out as a fanfiction, like on Wattpad or something. And I just feel like it keeps proving itself like time and time again as like something that people are really into and something that people really connect with and like a way to continue on stories. And it's still so put down. Anyway, that was kind of a tangent. But I did want to talk about like kind of what our favorite things about Starrkid are. So like we talked about, they did a bunch of different musicals. So I wanted to ask you, Logan, what's your favorite Starrkid musical? Is it Firebringer?
It is Firebringer. I really love... okay, I would say Firebringer, AVPM has to be in the top three, mm-hmm. and then Failed Organ are my top three.
Okay, I think my top three, I think a Harry Potter sequel is my favorite one. I might amend my...
I just, AVPM started it, and I almost view it all as, like, one continuous work, but the sequel is definitely, sure. I like it better.
It's like so much funnier. There's like the casting is really good. They bring back, so just some context, I guess, about AVPM. So Joe Walker is the guy who plays Voldemort, and he's like extremely hot.
Yes.
And Voldemort spends the first half of the musical trapped to another person's back, who plays Professor Quirrell. So he's like on Brian Rosenthal's back. And then he breaks away and he wears like just these pants and like a cape, and he's shirtless the whole time, and he's like jacked. So it's hot Voldemort, and that's sort
I would of say joke. Though that he is like jacked light, where it's like
jacked light,
which I prefer.
Yeah.
It's like you can see the structures there, but he's mm-hmm. not perfect, and he's got like a little body weight here and there, and it's like amazing.
Yes, he looks great.
I mean, I both love Joe Walker.
We love Joe Walker. Joe Walker, if you're listening, love
yeah,
you.
Yeah, hit us up.
But he also, so in the second one, he plays Umbridge as well, and it is the voice of it all, like the mannerisms. It's very, very funny. He's like a very talented guy, and I think like adding that character into the sequel, and then Lupin is in the sequel. He's not in the first one. There's like more Snape stuff in the second one. Sirius is in the second one. It's just really funny. It's like, I think a little tighter joke-wise than the first one. Like there's some kind of stretches where like, I don't know if it's because I can't really hear them because of the recording or whatever, but like there's some like kind of long lingering stretches in the first one, and I think the second one's a little tighter. So I say that's my favorite. I really like Twisted, like the fairy tale one. It's basically, it's like Wicked, but about like Jafar. I think Firebringer might be up there too. I'd never seen it before we did this, and I really liked it.
I love Firebringer so much.
It's really good.
I've seen it times.
I know. Okay. I actually do, like, to get started on a Harry Potter musical, if I may, I do want to talk a little bit about, like, the one thing that kind of bothers me, because I think a lot, so, like, each character is a parody of themselves in this musical, like, that's how it works. Like, Harry is an arrogant asshole who just, like, he's kind of a jock, he, like, thinks he's, like, the top shit at the school. Ron is a jerk who just eats all the time and is mean to girls and is just like a horrible kind of a bad person, but like loyal. He's still got the loyalty thing going on. Hermione is a nerd, everyone. And I think sometimes the Hermione stuff is like, now watching it back, I'm like, okay, this is getting to be a lot. But like, they're always mean to her. There's a lot of comments about her looks. Like, she's a nerd. She's a killjoy, the whole nine yards. Yeah, Draco, we'll get to Draco. I have a little section on Lauren Lopez. But I think all of those like parodies, and for the most part, all the character parodies are based in truth from the actual characters. Like, Harry is arrogant. He's not that arrogant, but like taking that bit of him and being like, what if Harry's just like a stupid asshole jock, and then doing that. And then taking even the Hermione stuff, which I think is still a little heavy-handed, is like, there's text for it in the books. Like, people talking about how crazy her hair is. She's a killjoy. She's a nerd. Like, there's like text to make the leap to the parodies of that, to that parody, you know? I think the only character who this just doesn't work for is Ginny. I don't understand why she's characterized this way at all. So she basically is like, the way Ginny functions in the story is they talk about how she's ugly all the time, which does not happen in the books. She's like very, I think, like a popular pretty girl in the books. They, all she does is like basically whimper and pine after Harry, which, to be fair, happens in the first couple books when she's like 12, which I guess she is supposed to be like 11 in this.
I love the age stuff in this.
I know. That's like, what I'm 13. I know. In the second one, there's a part where Harry goes, the Harry Potter, you know, is a 12-year-old superhero. I'm just an 11-year-old child. But so she just spends like the whole time whining and like whimpering after Harry. And I think like they try to bring it back a little bit. Like, she ends up being the one who like ends up like forcing him to, and like encouraging him to go after Voldemort. But I just like don't think that characterization of her only whimpering after Harry, I don't think it's strong enough in the books to be the parody for the show, if that makes sense. Like, she's kind of a jock. Like, she's kind of a jock in the book.
Yeah, I think that my take is that I totally agree that all the characters are just taking this like one part of their characters and really maxing it out. But I feel like for the most part, they do that like holistically, like with their characters throughout the books. I feel like Ginny's character is literally like first half of Chamber of Secrets Ginny, period. And then there's no more extrapolation from that.
Yeah. And it's the only thing that like doesn't work. And then like, I don't know, like there's a lot of like Hermione and Ginny are ugly in this show. Like, sometimes where I'm like, okay, like I get it. Like, but even then, like that comment about Hermione like comes from maybe some like fucked up stuff that's in the books, but it like stems from stuff that is there. There's like a point where someone walks in and sees Ginny and goes, Mr. Ginny, excuse me, Miss Ginny. And I'm like, what is the basis for this? Like, so that kind of stuff, I was like, this feels like it's just like to get a reaction. And while the other stuff feels like there's like a basis from the text for it. And some of the stuff for her, I just felt like, oh, I don't know what the basis is here.
Yeah, I agree with that. I definitely think that Ginny is like treated at, both Ginny and Hermione, I would say, are treated as the butt of the jokes, like always. I think Hermione's, I actually like, I kind of like that one because to me, what they're saying is that like Hermione is the brains and like
they would be dead without her. The whole
force of the Harry Potter series. Like, Harry is literally nothing without her. And yet she's still very often treated as like, I think she receives a lot of misogynistic treatment in the books because she's not stereotypically beautiful and she's like a nerd. So I kind of like that they really focus on
hers
that.
Doesn't bother me that much. Ginny's, it's just sometimes
doesn't really make as much sense to me.
Yeah. Ginny's doesn't make sense. The Hermione stuff, like, it makes sense and most of it is fine. It's just like, they're comics. So they're like harping on a point a lot and you're like, okay, I get it. Like, let's move on. And then the other thing I wanted to say about this that I didn't like and why a Harry Potter sequel is superior is Hermione doesn't really get to sing in this one. And in the second one, she has the Coolest Girl, that song, which is a fantastic song. And she actually gets to sing. And I wish she got to sing more in this one. And I like kind of forgot that that was the case. Like she really just kind of sings on the group songs.
Yeah.
And so I was a little disappointed. But you know what? That's why I gave it an 8 out of 10. But it's really, really funny, you guys. Like, I don't even know. I mean, should we just like have the Lauren Lopez conversation?
Oh my God, yeah. Okay. I love Lauren Lopez to the end of the earth and back.
She's a national treasure. She is operating on a level that is like so much hot. And not that anyone else is bad, but she has like some level that is just like stratospherically higher than everybody else.
She's more memorable
else.
Than
like,
Harry.
She's more memorable than any other single anyone. Person on stage. Maybe Joe Walker you could make a case for, but like absolutely not. Everything out of her mouth is fucking art. Like, like she doesn't, I don't know. So in the, I guess I should explain who she is in the show. She plays Draco Malfoy in the show, and she's also in Firebringer. She plays the main,
Zazalil.
The Firebringer, Zazalil, yes. And as Draco, so she's very small. She wears like a blonde wig. She's like smaller than everyone else on stage. And she just like plays up the aristocracy of it all in a very funny way, but also like rolls around on the floor. Like the way she moves is like so, it's like the perfect blend of aristocratic and pathetic. Like I don't know how else to describe it. Like she is actually like doing something. I know that sounds like this is a dumb musical, like it's just for fun. She is like really, she created a fucking character.
Literally did.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing too that like obviously that character was written and Lauren Lopez was not part of the writing team, I don't think, for this one.
I don't think so.
But like that is like how you take a text and just like make it your own. That is the clear what she does there. She like builds a whole world around this character of Draco and like executes it to the fucking max of both being this like arrogant little prick that is so annoying, but also this like really whiny, sensitive, like
I'm tired.
Yeah.
Can we just be Death Eaters?
If you refuse to spend the 2.5 hours to watch a Harry Potter musical, which like I don't understand, but whatever, kudos to you. You at least have to go to YouTube and watch a compilation of Lauren Lopez as Draco Malfoy. There are hundreds of them and you will not be disappointed.
It's amazing. And this show itself has like, I mean, there are a lot of lines. A lot of them go to Hermione, but like everyone has lines that are just kind of like expository, like to get the ball rolling, to get the plot moving along. And those are kind of throwaway, but like Lauren Lopez does not do throwaway lines. Like everything she says is so funny. Like every movement, every like facial expression. She's a really good singer, which like I think kind of gets lost in a Harry Potter musical because she's like doing the Draco voice and like the mannerisms.
Yeah, you definitely get
stuff.
More of that in Firebringer.
Yeah, she's incredible. I think she's great. And I do want to say, I think Joe Walker like operates on a similar level, but not the same. It's not the same.
I agree. Yeah. Okay, I had a couple things that I wrote down about AVPM that I just want to say real quick, and then I'll let you get back to yours. But the thing that I think I love the most about this show is this like dichotomy around how it's so simultaneously reverent to the source material while also, like you mentioned this at the beginning, like it because of that reverence, it's able to poke so much fun at the issues that are in the books. And for me, like two of the biggest examples that come up, the exoticism of Cho Chang in the books and like the tokenism of it all, like, I don't know. It's just so weird that we have this whole massive wizarding world and wizarding school and there's one Asian person in it and her name is Cho Chang. She's in Ravenclaw. Like, one thing you didn't mention when you were talking about the Cho Chang inference that I think makes it even better is that, so it's an Asian girl and two white girls come in and the Asian girl's like in the lead and they're singing this like really like Eastern Asian, like Chinese kind of like introduction song about Cho Chang. And then it like totally, like the audience is obviously led to believe that the Asian girl is Cho Chang. And it's like, what? Just because, like, I don't know. And I love that, like, turning it on its neck and be like, J.K. Rowling, why did you do this? You know? And then making Cho Chang this like Southern belle while Lavender Brown is the Asian girl. Genius. Chef's kiss.
I mean, recent actions would lead us to believe that she who must not be named does not have the best judgment. So, you know what? Okay. Hermione Granger wrote Harry Potter. Did you know that?
Now I do.
Yeah, but and to be like on, I guess, like a little more serious note, like I think like Harry Potter has, it's really hard to talk about it without talking about J.K. Rowling, but like you watch things like this and like obviously not in a monetary standpoint, like monetarily this is not true, but there gets to be a point where like something belongs to fans, I feel like, more than it belongs to the author. And like there's like a capitalist conversation to be had here, because like I don't ever really want to give her any more money, but when people make things like this, you can just like tell how much they care. Yes. And like they care enough to point out those flaws, like you said, and even like stupid flaws. There's like, so there's, if you've read Harry Potter, like basically like the seventh book is like the one where they camp in the woods and they just like are sitting around like trying to figure out how to find the Horcruxes, right? And like there's a point in a Harry Potter musical where Dumbledore gives them a medallion and that's how they're supposed to find the Horcruxes. So they just walk around and like hold the medallion up to things. And then Hermione, they're like, what should we do? We don't know what to do. And Hermione's like, well, we could like, you know, go traversing around the English countryside and like get really depressed and fight with each other and, you know, break into Gringotts and do all this stuff, which is all stuff that happens in the book. And Harry holds up the medallion and goes, yeah, well, the medallion says that's dumb, so we're not going to do that. Yeah, it's so even like stupid things. Like,
another example is that it explores the relationship between Voldemort and Quirrell. Which,
oh
like,
my God.
It's so, I mean, first of all, like, I ship them 100%. It's amazing. It's hilarious. But also, like, it's so fucking true. Like, this Voldemort's living on the back of Quirrell's head for a full, like, at least year from what we know in the first book.
Yeah.
And we never once get to see in the Harry Potter books, like, what was that like?
Like, what's going on?
We only see a very, very small window into that. But obviously they had to like literally learn to live together. And like, Quirrell is not as outwardly evil as Voldemort is.
I know. I love like the scenes between them when like Quirrell will say something like, oh my God, they're gonna do this, or like he said that, and he's like, yeah, I know, I hear everything you hear. Or like they like watch movies together and they're like, do you remember that part in that movie? He's like, no, you were watching it.
I only saw the second half.
It's so funny. I do love their relationship, and I love how like you think it's over and then it actually ends with them like after Voldemort dies. So what happens is they like Voldemort and Quirrell become friends, like they're buddies. They go to bars together. And then when they kill Cedric Diggory to get Voldemort's body back, they frame Quirrell for his death. So Quirrell goes to Azkaban. He, like, Harry doesn't kill him. He goes to Azkaban. Yeah, remember when 11-year-old Harry Potter straight up murdered a guy? I do. But so he goes to Azkaban. And then at the end, Harry kills Voldemort. And Voldemort's, like, soul is still floating around, I guess. And he goes to find Quirrell in Azkaban. And they're friends again.
Yeah, and there's definitely a lot of queer coding with it.
Oh, absolutely. I was like, they're in love. There's, because like every time Bellatrix Lestrange also shows up and they're like, her and Voldemort, there's like alluded to a sexual relationship, or more than alluded to, really. And at one point he's like, what if we just like put our backs against each other? And then they start, he like puts his back against her. And then he like moans very sexually. And she goes, what do we do now? And he's like, we can do whatever we want. We can watch a movie. Yeah, it's definitely like coded as like, perhaps this is a romantic connection, which I'm here for that. I love it.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I don't know. I could talk about this forever. The last stuff I really have is like, I feel like a bunch of quote unquote iconic lines came out of this that like me and my friends will quote back and forth to each other all the time. And I made a list and it's kind of long, so I probably won't go through all of them. But I did want to name a few and see if you agreed with me. So we already have "bitch, I ain't Cho Chang." I feel like that like made the rounds pretty frequently. Another favorite one of mine is "Hufflepuffs are particularly good binders." And then that's Cedric Diggory. And then Dumbledore says, "What the hell is a Hufflepuff?" I feel like that got levied at me a lot as a Hufflepuff.
I also feel like that is one of the parts of this show that also broke into mainstream culture. Mm-hmm. I feel like, I don't know, maybe I'm just an echo chamber, but I feel like that the joke about Hufflepuff's redeeming quality being them good finders, like, I don't know if a lot of people know that originated with this show.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it did break in. And also, that's another example of them making fun of, like, the limitations of the source material. Like, when Dumbledore is explaining the houses, he's like, basically, I just put everyone who looks like a good guy in Gryffindor and everyone who looks like a bad guy in Slytherin, and then the others can just go wherever the hell you want. I don't really care. And so another one of my favorites is, yeah, Hermione, I'm the boy who lived, not died. God. So I guess we should explain pig farts.
Oh my God.
I'm going to do this next one. So one of Draco Malfoy's things in the show is that he really wants to go to a different wizarding school called Pig Farts. So Pig Farts is on Mars, and their headmaster is a talking lion named Rumble Roar, who he can talk. And basically Draco just like really wants to transfer to Pig Farts. And one of my favorite things that he says is, I can't go to Pig Farts. It's on Mars. Not all of us inherited enough money to buy out NASA when our parents died, Potter. Let's see. I like when there's a point when Voldemort and Quirrell go to a bar and like try to pick up some girls, and you see the aftermath of it. Voldemort goes, back when I had a body, I had mad game with the bitches. Oh man. I also really like another running joke in it is that, which I think is also kind of alludes to fan fiction or what was popular in fan fiction at the time, is that Draco has like a huge crush on Hermione. Mm-hmm. And he's walking around and he's like basically like rating girls in school, and he's like, who do you think the ugliest girl in school is? And he says he thinks it's Hermione. And he starts off, he goes, I would give her a 7 out of 10. No, an 8. And he goes, but not over a 9.8, because there's always room for improvement. Not everyone's perfect like me. That's why I'm holding out for a 10, because I'm worth it. Oh man. And then I have so many written down. I'm just trying to find the best ones. Come on, I'm tired. Can't we just be Death Eaters? That's a good one. This is the last one I'll end on. It's something that Ron says. So another thing that Ron, I think I mentioned this before, Ron is always eating. And I actually made a list of everything he eats. So the first thing he eats, I couldn't really tell what it was. It looked like a sandwich, but he also had chopsticks. So I don't really know what was going on. He eats Funyuns. He eats sour neon crawler gummy worms, double stuffed Oreos, Reese's Pieces, beer, a giant Hershey bar, Twizzlers that he gets from the band, and powdered donuts. Those are all Ron snacks. And when he's eating the giant Hershey bar, he's like holding it like it's like a comfort blanket. And it's right after he's realized that he has a crush on Hermione. And he goes, it's just like, I can't get her out of my head. And every time I look at her, I get these pains in my chest. And I just know it's her fault, that bitch. me and my friends used to say that to each other quite a bit. I just know it's her fault, that bitch. I could literally talk about this for hours. We can move on. I love it so much.
I agree. Cultural impact. Speaking of cultural impact, let's talk about Firebringer.
Let's go.
I feel like I would be remiss to not start with what actually is a cultural impact from Firebringer, that I believe went like viral through Vine, with like a literally that 6 second clip of Lauren Lopez singing mm-hmm. I don't know how to work today. That like is part of just like the zeitgeist now.
Yeah.
I feel like.
For sure. I had no idea what it was from, and I've definitely heard that a million times.
Yeah. So, okay, to talk about Firebringer, I want to start off with talking about something I don't know if this gets enough love. Maybe it does. I don't know. But something that I am personally obsessed with in this show, which is the narration. So this whole show is narrated by a character named Molag. She is like painted to be, she was like the former leader of the tribe who now is just kind of like an elder and like wants to walk to find the end of the world. But she narrates, like she comes in probably like 4 times per act and like just gives some narration. She opens the show as well. And I think that what she does so actually what opens the show is this like little mini foreshadowing of them discovering fire and singing the fire song. But it's very brief. And then Molag comes on and is like describing what's happening and what the show is about. And I think from the very beginning, you know what kind of show this is going to be because of her. She starts talking about like the discovery of fire and the audience is just like completely silent. And she's like, okay, well, you know what, you privileged fucks? Like, you didn't know everything yeah. back then. And like immediately breaks the fourth wall. And her whole character is about breaking the fourth wall and calling the audience privileged fucks and just calling things how they are. I think that she is phenomenal. And also the actress that's playing her, this is her first Star Kid show.
She's great.
There's only 3 new ones in Firebringer, and she's one of them. Mm-hmm. I think her name is Lauren Walker, something. I know her last name is Walker. The second like overarching thing that I want to talk about this show is that I think it does a really incredible job at deconstructing like all of society, given that this is in a pre-society world. Like it's just the literal beginning of it all. Mm-hmm. I love that in this world, there is no gay or straight, there just is. It's not seen as abnormal to be attracted to people of all genders. It just like is the truth. But I also love that women hold pretty much all the power in this show, and it's never once questioned. And the reason I love this is because I would not even call this show like a women's empowerment, a female empowerment show mm-hmm. at all, even though I think like there are very clear demonstrations of women empowerment. But like there's no like girl boss anthem or like anything, you know, it just is like this is how it is, mm-hmm. period. I have read one, like a review of the show, and I really like this quote. It says, Firebringer provides a refreshing change from this cliche by skipping right to the part where no one has to question women's rights because they just exist. It's from mm-hmm. high school. And what it's talking about is that a lot of like female empowerment, you know, shows or movies or whatever, like spend so much time focusing on why like women are held back and why they shouldn't be able to accomplish this thing. And so then it's this really big empowering moment when they do. But in Firebringer, it just is like, no, that's not even a barrier. It just, you know, like women can do whatever the fuck they want. Mm-hmm. They are competent, if not more competent leaders. I love that.
Yeah.
So another thing about the deconstruction in this show is that I think it gives it a lot of opportunities to, like I was saying at the beginning, I think part of it gives the opportunities to make these really, really poignant commentaries on things that are just like societal norms now that like we as human beings totally made and like created these boxes for ourselves to live in. And it does that, I think, really well with gender. I think there's a lot of like climate and politic parodies there. But I also think it's able to do it in a dumb way for comedic effect. I think one of the big ways it does this is with stand-up comedy.
And
stand-up comedy and the character Schwoopsy. If you don't know, there's this character, her name's Schwoopsy, and she has like created the first joke ever. And basically she's just like telling a scenario where she like has a flub and then pauses and she goes like, and I was like, Whoopsie, and like everyone goes wild. But she does it in this way that's parodying like stand-up comedy in a really, really mm-hmm. genuine way. I also love the recurring joke of like starting phrases, but just
that
not.
Is my favorite joke. I laughed so hard. Oh my God. When she's like, man, shit's about to hit the.
I don't even know.
I don't even know.
Yeah, there's and that's like a really big recurring joke throughout the musical because the things that they're making references about just haven't been invented yet. So I'm gonna say them all actually. So there's flying by the seat of my. Oh, I don't even know. Then there's I don't want to be around when shit hits the one we just said. Mm-hmm. Maybe you and I are two sides of the same. I don't even know what. And then Schmooksy's second joke that she tells after her first one like becomes a flop and is no longer funny to the group is, why did the chicken cross the road? I don't know. What's a road?
That's so funny. What's a road?
So good. Yes. Okay. One thing I also wanted to talk about is that this is the first Firebringer show with a female protagonist, and actually in this case there's two female protagonists. Also, Meredith Stepien is, she plays Jamila. First of all,
she's new Hermione.
Yes.
She replaces the girl who plays Hermione, who, let me remember her name. She replaces Bonnie Grusin as Hermione in a very Potter senior year. And she comes out and Ron's like, oh, Hermione, you look different. And she's like, but I'm the same in here.
Well, first of all, in general, but like, I think especially in Firebringer, she is like drop dead gorgeous. Like,
she's beautiful. Yeah.
It like blows my mind. But she co-wrote the lyrics and the music of the show. And so also it's the first Firebringer show to have like a woman on the creative team, which is
cool.
A little sad, but also really great that it's.
Yeah. It's kind of hard to keep hearing those like first things because you're just yeah, like, really?
We talked about that.
Yeah, we did.
One thing that I think that this like shows really well is this like duality of society. I feel like it shows like the very beginning of that, to me, is very much still in play today. And I think it's represented by like, on one hand, Zazalil, who has this like very big desire to advance and to make life easier for us and to innovate things using the resources in the world around us. And then on the other hand, there's Jamila, who represents this like desire to just like be safe and to maintain peace and accord and often doing that through caution. I feel like that is still like, to this day, we have conversations around whether or not it is like too soon to be advancing in one area of society, or if we need to focus on making, you know, what we already have right now better and safer for us. I love the gender commentary in the show. I know I mentioned the like part about women just being like in power, period, and not having that be like a thing. But I also love this. So there's three main men, one like three and a half, I'll say.
Yeah, I was like, there are barely any men. Yeah.
Yeah, there's three, and then there's like a half one who comes in like for two small scenes. But he's like the lighting guy. Like literally his name is Clark Backstresser, and that's also his name in the show. They don't say it, but like that's what it's credited as.
Yeah. No, I think she does when she's like, hi Clark, like,
oh,
that's
my
husband Clark.
Yeah. But I love that like all the male characters also like, I feel like, poke fun at a lot of gender roles in their character. Mm-hmm. I think that Grunt, who's played by Joey Richter, who is Ron in the Harry Potter musical.
Yeah.
He like very much plays this like damsel in distress character that is saved by I can't remember her name in the show. But she is saved by one of the members of Emberley. Is saved by one of the members of the tribe. And they have this like little love story going on that's really cute. But he's very much this like, I was like abandoned by my tribe. I don't have a family, like whatever. And she's the one that like comes in and sweeps in and saves him. I also think the character Smelly Balls is really, really hilarious in general, but also does this really like really good performance of like early society, like machismo, like over macho character,
guy.
Which like the tea is, that is the like early society personality that like gained power and like is much more prominent in society now. But at the time is just kind of seen as like dim-witted and stupid. And I love that. And also like throughout the show is able to kind of like break down those walls and be more sensitive and like caring. And that's seen as a really like positive trait. So yeah, all in all, I mentioned this in my rating, but like the reason I love this show so much is it knows what it is and it accomplishes that. I think that it like it breaks the fourth wall a lot. There's like one moment where Molag, the narrator, is literally like, "Now I know what you're thinking. Don't be mean to Lauren." Like,
Yeah, and that happens in they do that a lot. That happens in a very Potter musical after they say "Not Alone." Draco Malfoy, Lauren Lopez, walks out and goes, "I was just hanging out backstage and I heard you guys singing."
Yeah, there's a lot of like, wait, we got to get our harmonies right. Or like when they do the, I don't really want to do the work today. Jamila's like, did you all like learn this choreography?
Yeah.
Where was I?
I did want to say really quickly about Emberly and then the Joey Richter character. I love the little jokes they do where he's like, "What's your name?" She goes, "Emberly," and he goes, "Emily," and she goes, "Yeah, that's fine." And then like
Grunt the painting. And Grant.
Yeah, Grunt and Grant. And then he makes a painting. And she goes, "Painting?" He goes, "Yeah, that works."
I also like that because it's kind of an Uno reverse like reference to what they do in a Harry Potter musical with Ginny, where Ron introduces her as Ginny. And she's it's like, "Ginevra." "Oh, that's Ginevra." And Harry's goes, like, "Ginny's fine."
Yeah. He's like, "Cool, Ginny's great."
Yeah, don't worry about it. Ginny's good. Yeah.
That is why, sorry, that reminded me of the other, one of my other favorite jokes in a Harry Potter musical, the song Ginny.
Yes, that's my favorite. Yeah, well, I think.
Or, like, so, what'd you say?
I was going to say it's my favorite song, but it's my second favorite. Granger Danger, the duet with
Ron. Oh,
that was my favorite.
Granger Danger is a fucking bop. But I love Ginny. So, like, the joke, sorry, the joke is, Harry sits down, he's like, "I wrote this song for Cho Chang, but I'm gonna like use your name in place of hers for now. It's probably not gonna work with your name." And then like the joke is that it totally works with Ginny. Perfect. It would not work with Cho Chang. Like everything rhymes with Ginny. Yeah, it's very funny. I like that a lot.
I feel similarly. I could talk forever about this show, but those were like the big thematic things I wanted to say. Oh, I also do want to talk really quickly about the leveling up in like production value, because that I think that like this is their highest level of production to date. And what I love about it is that it like, I feel like it does it in the right moments, but like, I think again, it still knows what kind of show it is. And it's not this like super glitzy, glammy, like high production show. I think they just like do it in the right places where it helps out. I think Snarl, so one of the main like antagonists in this show is Snarl, which is this like ancient, like, you don't really even know. I think it's kind of like an ancient like saber-toothed tiger.
Yeah,
like,
that's what I thought.
Really aggressive animal that comes out at night and kills humans. And it's like a really, really well done puppet. Puppet's not the right word maybe, but it's like, cause it's huge. It's like life size.
Yeah.
That's a really good example. I think the costuming in this show is phenomenal. Yeah, I think that they like upped the production in all the right places without trying to like make it into, you know, a professional Broadway production.
No, I think that's right. Oh man. I guess I can do my bop list.
Yeah, I'll
okay, let's see. So I mean, you got to put Get Back to Hogwarts on there. It's a great song. Darren Criss is a treasure. That's what I wrote down. I also like in this song and all throughout, I love how magic is handled and in the way that it's not handled at all. Like, just like, there's a point in Get Back to Hogwarts where they have to use flu powder to get somewhere. And instead of doing an effect or like trying to make it a thing, they just run around in a circle and go, flu powder, power, flu powder, power, flu powder, power. So I really like the way magic is handled. It's just very funny. Then you've got Different As Can Be, which is kind of like Voldemort and Quirrell's odd couple song that they sing back to back. That's pretty funny. We talked about Ginny. It's a good bit. Then you get to Ginny's song, Harry, which is really called Sammy. Did you know this?
No.
So yeah, Darren Criss wrote it. I guess they wrote it for some web series they did. And then they revamped it for a Harry Potter musical. So it's actually called Sammy.
I did not
Thank
know
you
that.
Very much. It was written about me. Surprise. And I will say, for the problems I have with Ginny's characterization, she does have some of the best songs.
Yeah.
And then I guess Cho Chang is funny just because it Cho Chang, the song, is just Ginny the song, but with Cho Chang instead. So Ginny goes like, yeah, it doesn't work. So Ginny goes, you're tall and it's a horrible song. It's like, you're tall and fun and skinny. You're really, really pretty. Ginny. And like, he just does a whole thing. But for Cho Chang, it's like, you're tall and fun and skinny. You're really, really pretty. Cho Chang. Just doesn't work at all. And then you get to Granger Danger, which is the best song in the show. It's a duet between Ron and Draco, and they sing about like how in love they are with Hermione when they see her come to the Yule Ball and how it means danger. And it's so good. I think it's actually pretty like cleverly written. It's got cool harmonies. It's kind of hard to sing. Lauren Lopez and Joey Richter both do a great job. It's a great song. I like it. And then you've got To Dance Again, which is like Voldemort's tap dancing number when he gets his body back. Not Alone, which is just a straight up jam. I love all the bad riffs at the end, like the shitty riffs they do when they're trying to one-up each other at the very end. So good. That's also when Lauren Lopez comes out and says, are you guys singing backstage? I just wanted to come out. Yeah, those are my bops. I think like the other ones, like the dragon song that he sings is like pretty good, but kind of short. And then there's another song called Missing You, which isn't, it's kind of sad. It's like Quirrell and Voldemort missing each other. And then like Harry singing about Dumbledore because Dumbledore is dead at this point. So, and it's actually kind of sweet. They're able to like shoehorn in some like actually pretty moving numbers, which is nice. Yeah. But yeah.
Okay, my Firebringer bop list. Another thing, in addition to production value that I think they level up on, I think they really, really level up music-wise.
Oh, yeah.
I think that a lot of the songs from AVPM, I don't get me wrong, I think there are some really good ones, but I think sure. A lot of them are just like really funny and fun.
Yeah,
exactly. And that's why I love them. Whereas I think that there are some like really great songs in Firebringer. Mm-hmm. Okay. Fire. We Are People Now. I love when they're like, this is the dawn
yeah.
of our womankind. So good. We Got Work to Do. What bop list would be one without that song? Mm-mm. What If? That's like kind of Zazzalil's I Want number in the show. Just a Taste. It's a duet between Emberlee and Grunt where she's like
I love that song.
Talking about her job as like the what tastes good and what humans can eat. The Night Belongs to Snarl. Oh my god, I love The Night Belongs to Snarl. So in the show they basically have like this whole big production already ready, just like this whole tribe about how they feel about Snarl. And then The Night Belongs to Us, which is the closing number of act one. Act two, we have Climate Change. I love it because it's this like parallel of the climate in this tribe is changing, like things are different, yeah. The leadership, but also it's like the discovery of fire, thinking really literally as the beginning of climate change. Yeah. And there's this one part where Lauren Lopez makes a joke where I'm going to butcher it. It's not the exact thing, but something along the lines of like, why I think if we work hard enough, we could change the climate of the whole world for ever.
Lauren.
And then we go to Paint Me, which is when Grunt and Emberly like paint each other. Together, it's a duet between Zazzlil and Jamila. Chorn, best song in the show.
Chorn.
And I'm going to talk more about Chorn in my recreate. And then the finale, Make the Most of It.
Awesome. Oh, I love Star Kid. I am a motherfucking Star Kid.
Yes. Also, if you didn't know, that was supposed to be to, not you didn't know, the listeners. that's supposed to be to the tune of The Weeknd. I'm a motherfucking star boy. So it's like, I'm a motherfucking star kid.
Oh my gosh, I love it so much. Okay, let's move on to these recreates.
Let's do it.
So I'll go first. Technically, what I'm taking from is from a Harry Potter sequel, but you know what? It's our show. We can do whatever we want. So for my recreate, I think a thing that has always kind of like been a popular thing to think about in like Harry Potter fandom is like the story from someone else's point of view. So like Neville Longbottom, for example, like in the story of Harry Potter, could have been the chosen one, but he wasn't, just because of like a choice that Voldemort made. So like, well, let's think about like, what would that be like if it was Neville Longbottom's story instead? There's like a running joke on, there's like a picture of all the book titles from Draco's point of view. It's like Draco Malfoy and who the fuck is this kid? Draco Malfoy and my father will hear about this. It's pretty funny. So I decided to rewrite the song Harry Freaking Potter from the point of view of some other characters. So I just did the chorus, and Harry Freaking Potter is not the opening number of a Harry Potter sequel, but it's like the big number. So a Harry Potter sequel takes place when Harry first gets to Hogwarts and like first meets Ron and Hermione for the very first time. And so it's like Ron and everyone at the train station realizing that he is Harry Potter, and they sing a song. And just so you know how it goes, I'm gonna sing the chorus of Harry Freaking Potter so you can just like figure out the sounds. So, yes, it goes, you're Harry Freaking Potter. You don't understand, you're a legend man to us all. Every son and daughter safe from you know who, all because of you. You were small, but I wonder if you can recall. And then they go into a little verse. So I just rewrote that chorus part. From the point of view of some characters. So we're going to start off with none other than Neville Schlongbottom, which is a mean thing that they call him in the show. And it actually originates in, you like see how it originates in a Harry Potter sequel, and Harry's the one who came up with it because he's a dick. So Neville freaking Longbottom, we may call you Schlong, but it's all in good fun. Right, bro? You're the one who taught him that standing up to your friends can be a good plan. Oh, oh, Dumbledore, give him the points. That was...
I love that.
So that was a reference to, at the end of the very first Harry Potter movie, Dumbledore, just rigging the system for Gryffindor from the start, gives 100 points to Neville Longbottom because he stood up to his friends, and sometimes it's harder to stand up to your friends than it is to stand up to your enemies. So, next we've got Hermione Granger herself. You're Hermione freaking Granger. You may have bushy hair, but your mind is where it's all at. Friend of Ron and Harry, if it wasn't for you, they'd be dead, they go boom, they go splat, still you turned yourself into a cat.
Oh my god.
Hermione. I want all of you. Draco Malfoy is next on the list. You've got your Draco freaking Malfoy. You like to roll around like you think you're better than us, but you hide your true thoughts. You say you'll tell your dad, but we know that you're scared of Lucius. Oh, Draco, don't be a wuss.
That, wow.
That's Draco's. Thank you. I am a professional writer. Ron Weasley's next on the list. You're Ronald freaking Weasley. You like to eat a lot and you've got a crush. You like to eat a lot and you've got a crush on your best friend, but instead of sharing, you like to put her down. Come on, Ronald, Be a man, forget about the red vines and be a man. So the red vines in the second, the red vines reference, in the second, in the very Potter sequel, they like do this running gag where they're always eating red vines and it's like promotion, like it's product placement, and they'll always like look at the camera and be like, red vines. So wanted to like slide that in there if I could. And then the last one I've got is about Ginny Weasley. So here we go. You're Ginny freaking Weasley. You're Ron's little sis, but you're more than this, you'll see. You're a badass athlete, a Quidditch star, and you will go far, Ginny. Stop singing about Harry.
Excellent. So
that's all I got.
I'm obsessed with that. That's you. Honestly one of my favorite of your recreates.
Yay! Oh my god, thank you. Wow. I came up with it like before rewatching because I was just like, all this is burned into my brain, and I was like, that'll be fun. And yeah. I don't really know how to like recreate this. I guess I could have been a Ginny thing, but it's so silly. It's like, I don't know.
Yeah, I feel that. Yeah. Okay. So mine is more of a concept than a recreate. Okay. So okay, before I go deep into this, I want to talk a little bit about Chorn, which I've saved for talking until now, but Chorn is my favorite character in this show. So if you've never seen Firebringer, Chorn is like a character who literally only says the word Chorn, and it comes into play many times. It's like comedy, it's like emotional. She like does things at different times, but at the very end of the show, Chorn comes out and basically reveals that she is an alien from the future that has been keeping an eye on planet Earth. And like, it was her that gave Zazzalil the fire at the very beginning, or at the, like when she discovers fire. And then she sings this whole song about how she is Chorn and whatever. And she basically gives like the gift of enlightenment to all of these tribal members. And what that looks like is just the entire future of humanity, so that they have this purpose and they know what they're working towards. And that's literally that happens. It's the second to last song. And then the last song is like, we've got a lot to do to work it out. We have a lot to do to like make all of this a reality. And they're re-inspired again. I think it's hilarious. It's so out of the blue. It's not what you're expecting at all. You're like literally never given any indication or foreshadowing that Chorn is anything but this kind of like dumb character. I love it. So for my concept, I want to explore what it would look like to do a sequel to Firebringer. However, I think it would be less of a sequel, like a Harry Potter sequel is, and more of a like addition to the Starkid cinematic universe. Kind of like takes place in the same realm as Firebringer and like whatever. Mm-hmm. So the concept is, I want to see a follow-up to Firebringer that gives us a really deep dive into Chorn and the like future alien society that she lives in that makes this whole story happen. So to start, I think it would be really fun to start like way deep, deep, deep into the future, where these aliens have this like overview of Earth and can see what has happened and how humanity has evolved over time. I think that like, so I'm less like giving a plot and more just like a few things here and there that I think could be funny, and then Starkid can go write the actual thing. Okay. I think it would be funny to have a scene where the like Chorn aliens are tuning into like different frequencies of the past and seeing like when the right time to intervene is, because they obviously ended up choosing the dead ass like very beginning of time, of human time.
They're like, and this needs work.
Yeah, and it's like, I could see a funny scene kind of being like tuning into like the Renaissance and being like, ooh, what if we did this here? Or tuning into like medieval era and, you know, doing something here or there with war. But then eventually they like come across these like dumb as fuck tribal members and are like, honestly, we just gotta like enlighten the very beginning people.
Yeah.
I would love to learn more about Chorn, and I want to see what role she plays in this alien society. Is she like their leader? Is she a like volunteer or a tribute to go back in time and like play this role? Like what's going on there? Because we don't know anything about any of the other aliens other than Chorn. And obviously she's got to have some kind of backstory there. Because at the end, she's like this all-knowing being, kind of. And where did she get that? And what are her insecurities? And what are her faults? And what are her dreams? the last thing is that in this sequel, I really want to get more insight into why the aliens are doing this and why they feel this need to come back. At first, I was like, oh, it's because in the future, we've, like, fucked up with climate change and war, and we've, like, destroyed ourselves and the planet, like, whatever. But the more I think about it, the more that just, like, doesn't feel like the right premise for going back and introducing fire to people and humanity. Because, yeah, as is mentioned many times in this show, like, it kind of is, like, the start of, okay, it's a massive, massive leap to say this is the start of industrialization, but like in terms of like in terms of using resources on Earth to better humanity and like taking and like killing things, like they kill all the mammoths in the area, like it is the start of that, which in a very long string of events leads to industrialization in the world we know now. So it doesn't feel like introducing fire would solve that issue of like if the world ending in climate change. So I also would love to see the state of affairs in the world where these aliens decided they needed to go back in time and change something. Because why fire and why are they doing this? And I think there's a lot of like, again, like the whole concept of Firebringer, I think there's a lot of poignant things they could do. And I think there's a lot of really dumb, funny things that they can do.
Love it.
So that's my concept for Chornbringer.
Chorn or musical. Yeah, I love Chorn. It.
Also, like vocally, I'm just gonna say Chorn. So Jamie is, I think her name's Jamie, is the character, the actress that plays Chorn. This is also her first StarKid show. Her Molag in Tiblin. Tiblin is a character who thinks she's holding up the sky.
And oh, I love that.
First 30 minutes of the show is like has her arms in the air. It's insane. Clap arms of steel. But Chorn to me is the best vocalist StarKid has ever seen, period. She has this big belting number at the end where she's like just belting how she's Chorn. She has like a little operatic moment going on at some point in the show where she's like, Chorn!
I love when they sing opera. That was my favorite part.
That's my concept. Chorn.
Yeah. I love it. I think StarKid, if you're listening, these are out here for free.
I just need to...
These are ideas for free.
I just need to meet Lauren Lopez.
That's all I want. Oh man, that was fun. That was
the people that will listen will like it.
I hope so. I love it so much. I don't know like how to explain how much joy it brings me. It's very nostalgic. Should we tease next week?
Yeah, let's do it.
Kind of excited about this. Okay, next week's episode or next week's category is drum roll. Once, not Once the Musical.
So we're not doing the show Once, but we are doing two shows that have the word Once in the title.
Again, not Once the Musical.
And this is not any hate toward Once.
No.
Maybe we'll do that later this season. Very unlikely.
Maybe not.
Maybe we'll do it in season 3, 4, 5, 10, whatever.
Mm-hmm. We'll see. 10. Wow. Okay. Oh man, Logan. Thanks for chatting with me about this. I love it. Thank you.
This has been
all right, everybody.
Amazing.
Has been amazing. Follow us on Twitter at RateDebate1. And follow us on Instagram.
Click that at RateDebateRecreate.
Yes, please do it. Right. Bye.
Bye. Great.